Hi, everyone. Let's get started now. We'll just wait for the doors to shut to get into any detail. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for actually staying awake this late to actually come in and hear my session, especially the guys who are at AppFest as well. I can see a lot of faces here from the guys at AppFest. You're mostly just as tired as I am, but everyone else, it's been a really, really long day, and obviously there was a lot of beers last night, so congratulations for actually getting through. My name is Lewis Bench. I'm kind of the token hardware developer presentery type person when it comes to Windows 8 and a load of other devices as well that Microsoft are now moving into. I've been working with Windows 8 since build last year. I went over with a couple of guys from Australia, and I've worked through the Windows 8 roadshows. I've come back from Auckland last week for TechEd, and I'm here presenting to you again today. I actually work for a company called TBWA Digital Arts Network, where I look after a team called the Devices and Integration Team. Basically means, in the terms of advertising, we get these wacky creative types that come up to us and say, hey, we really want to connect to like a street sign or something like that, or make puppets jump up and down. It's my job to try and figure out how to do that type of stuff, and hardware is the way I obviously get there. But I'm not here to talk about Kinect, I'm here to talk about Windows 8. And all of this nice, shiny stuff that we've now got access to in the Windows 8 APIs. Sorry that the title was a little bit vague. Obviously, there's a series of these developer sessions, but this one is specifically about Windows 8 hardware and everything we have access to. And throughout this session, what I'm going to do is try and follow this graceful degradation approach. So I'm going to start with lowest common denominators in terms of the hardware and sensors that we have access to, and kind of layer on top of that. And Windows 8 is all about this new interpretation of user interface and connecting with people in a different way through your apps. And we spend a lot of time talking to you about user experience, and a lot of that is done by people like Shane Morris and Alex Knight, who are looking at the visual sides of user experience. But user experience it's an experience as a whole. And when you're talking about these new form factor of devices that have all of this new technology in place, you've got to make the most of these APIs to actually provide that experience. And that's going to be things like gestures and voice recognition and cameras and all sorts of things. So it's quite an important thing, and I'm quite a passionate person around these types of experiences and building it up. Specifically, I'm going to be talking to you about these specifics. So media capture, so I'm going to be looking at cameras, audio, video, that kind of stuff. And then I'm going to talk about geolocation, GPS, all the sensors that we have access to in these new devices, technology called NFC, which is actually one of my favorite parts of Windows 8. I'll touch on touch, and then other devices. And like build for me, it was 5 days of pure goodness of hardware, but it was hundreds and hundreds of sessions around the changes in hardware architecture and how apps use hardware and the driver stacks and all that kind of stuff. And there's so much to talk about that I can't fit in the hour and 15 minutes they've given me to you. So I'll go through very, very briefly and summarize all the other stuff I can't talk about. But if you have any other questions, I'll be around for a while tonight, and you can come and find me at the pub or something and come and have a chat about that kind of stuff. So in this lowest common denominator approach, we're going to start with cameras. Cameras are something that we've had access to for a while now, and this could be your webcam, your peripheral webcam you plug into your desktop. It could be the embedded webcams in your Ultrabooks and your laptops. It could be your DSLRs and bits and pieces you're plugging in, but we have access to cameras. I'd say 99% of people are going to have some type of camera attached to them, attached to their machine. And when we're talking about cameras, we're not necessarily just talking about still imagery and video, but also audio as well, capturing all these different inputs of the computer being able to see and hear what you're doing. And when we talk about cameras, like traditionally Windows, we've been pretty good at doing image capture, not necessarily so good about video. A lot of the video stuff that we had in XP and moving up the stack through Vista and Windows 7, it was plugins, so we was relying on vendors to do our video stuff for us. But now Windows 8 provides us pure goodness around video. And there was a session before mine around building a Windows 8 app around media capture and video, and they would have touched on some of this stuff. But I'd just like to highlight the significant changes we have in video in Windows 8 that you can harness within your apps. And specifically, these are things like 3D video. We can natively now output stereoscopic 3D video to your 3D TVs, your 3D displays, 3D projectors, so we can start to use some of these new media formats we're getting in Blu-ray and all this kind of stuff and bring that into our app. Another good one here, Play 2. If you have a DLNA smart TV or an Xbox or something like that, Play 2 is a great addition to the video stack that we have now. This is the contract API, so this has been touched on throughout these Windows 8 sessions, but your app can subscribe to this Play 2 contract that you're literally passing your video into the Play 2 contract, and Windows will handle the DLNA negotiation with video output devices. So essentially you can build a YouTube-style app where you're consuming or displaying video and subscribe to this contract and say Play 2. It will list all of your smart TVs and Xboxes that are on your network and will push that content back out over the wire, and you can display it on large format. Windows 8 will do all of that for you, and you just subscribe to the API. And we got other stuff in there like DRM and a whole load of extra things that we never had access to in apps. And these are all managed APIs, very, very easy to use. All of this lives in this Windows.media namespace. Huge namespace. Again, it would take days to actually go through all this type of stuff. But if you're in, if you're doing anything with media capture, media display, this is where you want to be. Specifically, though, because this is devices, I'm going to talk about capture. And capture comes in two forms. This is a control, which is a camera capture UI, or the media capture API, the harnessing the raw inputs from these media peripherals. And the significant difference here is, when we've dealt with cameras before, the experience has kind of been somewhat degraded. Like I said, we've relied on vendors to actually provide this experience for us. And even people like Scott Hanselman, like significant Microsoft personalities, have campaigned around a consistent experience to capture images through webcams and through cameras and stuff like that. And we've kind of had these wizards built in, but every app has done it differently, and you've never had this seamless capability. In Windows 8, that's changed. And we've had file picker, file explorers, which have been controls that developers we can latch onto, we now have a camera capture control as well, which will go out, it will attach itself to a peripheral webcam or an embedded webcam on your machine, and it will just allow you to access that. Windows will handle all of it, and it will just pass you back either a video or an image. Not all developers want to pass their stuff off back to Windows, though. They want to maintain integrity and control of their user experience and their user interface. Or you might want to do something a little bit more complicated. You might want to be building an augmented reality app or QR code scanners and that kind of stuff. And you would need to actually access the raw input streams and be able to process them in a live way. So this is where media capture APIs come in. So the camera capture UI is built on top of these APIs. Camera capture UI abstracts a lot away. Media capture API allows us to still have that raw power and access it through very rich managed APIs. Easiest way to try and explain this is that it can be a confusing concept, is just to show you. So what I'm going to do is jump across to, I've now managed to spawn my machines. Normally I present on one, I've now got three, so it may get a little confusing of me switching between different things. But here I've just got Windows 8. And I'm actually just going to jump into the start menu. And the easiest way for me to show you camera capture UI is to show you how Windows is using it out of the box. And obviously that's going to be in the camera app. So I'll load this up, and you'll see this user interface. It's a very familiar user interface if you've played with this, and it'll be a familiar interface if you've used other applications that subscribe to these camera capture UIs. It's just a control, and all Microsoft has done is they've put this control into an app, and then they've pushed it out through the store and said, hey, this is how you can now latch onto a camera. Very, very easy to use. As a user, I can click on the image, it will capture my image, and it will then save that back onto the file system. As a developer, I have access to exactly the same experience. So what I'm going to do is I have this application here that I've built up specifically for TechEd. When I was told I was presenting at TechEd, I was told by two different people two different things. First was Nick Hodge, who led the Win8 Roadshow, and he said, it's TechEd, you've got to talk line of business. You can't talk consumer apps, talk line of business apps. I said, okay, I'll build line of business. I then got my fiancée, who, if anyone's met my fiancée, and quite a few people have, because she did come to some of the roadshows and she's involved in some of this stuff, she always says, you have to try and somehow mention me in your presentations. It's like, okay then, so I've got to build this business app and I've got to somehow mention my fiancé. And my fiancé's just gone through a personal training course. She's now a qualified personal trainer. So it's like, okay, I'll build a line of business app around being a personal trainer and I can drop her into the presentation somehow. So what I'm going to do is, I'm not a UI developer, so please don't criticize the look and feel of this application. It's really ugly. All I'm going to do is I'm going to remote deploy from the Visual Studio I have here onto a machine I have next to me. This machine is a Samsung Series 7 Slate. You'd have seen a few of these around this, around Microsoft events in general. This one's specially modified, though. This has the same minimum hardware specification that a lot of the new devices we'll start to see come will have. It has front and rear facing cameras, NFC, a load of sensors and bits and pieces, which I'll explain as we go along. So I'm going to hit remote deploy, and you should start seeing it come up on your screen and my little screen if everything goes to plan, which it's not going to. Ah, the remote debugger has turned itself off. Okay, so here's my fairly basic line of business app. So it's around, I was thinking it's a CRM system. She's a personal trainer. She goes out to the beach and she goes to the gyms and all these kind of places. And she wants to have her client information in a nice, easy, and accessible way. So if I jump into clients, I have a list of clients. And I can jump into a client record and I have some lorem ipsum, which kind of represents all the information she would store on her client. As a personal trainer, apparently one of the things you're taught is never to forget a name or a face. So it's always going to be handy when you have these client records to try and snap a photo of them. And it's also great for them as well because you can snap pictures of people as they're progressing through their training program, see them losing weight, and provide reassurance to them. As a developer, this is fairly easy for me to do. But as a consumer, my fiance isn't an IT pro. She wants a consistent experience. She wants to be able to go on Facebook and upload a photo and have the same experience in her line of business apps as well. So the way we do this is this camera capture UI. So you'll see down the bottom on this app bar, I have a camera icon. If I click it, I actually hand that control completely off to Windows, and I'm brought back into that same experience. The look and feel is exactly the same as that camera application that I just showed you, apart from it's a little bit darker because the lighting's changed a little bit. But this is Windows now. This isn't my application. Windows is doing everything. It's a very, very rich API. I can change which camera I'm going to look at. So you'll now see the stage behind me because it's the rear camera instead of the front-facing camera. And the actual hardware can kind of modify this control. So if you have, say, a Logitech camera, the vendors can adapt this control. But it's the OS. That's what you're dealing with. If I just hit OK, you'll get this really ugly picture of me. I get, again, rich controls. I can crop, I can resize, I can retake. None of this is my application. It's all just Windows. If I hit OK, that image is then just passed back in. So my application gets a link to the file system of where that image is now being stored. I'm loading that into XAML and displaying it into my application. Very, very easy to do. So I thought I'd actually show you how to do this. And it's going to get confusing because I have to push a lot of buttons to do it, mainly on this unit here. First, I want to show you in JavaScript. This may look a little bit unfamiliar to you because since the slide deck came out, Visual Studio has improved and we're not editing the XML. But when we actually access devices, we have to specifically ask permission from the users. And we do this from a process called the app manifest file. In Visual Studio, this is now a nice package management tool. You double-click on the file, you go into a tab and say devices, and you can tick all the different bits and pieces. If you're a JavaScript developer and you're not using Visual Studio, that file is just XML. If you're editing the XML, you need to add these nodes in to use any of this media capture functionality. Even if you're not using the microphone, you're just using the webcam, you still need to ask for it because obviously it opens up everything on that one control. Okay, again, I'm not a UI developer. I'm also not a JavaScript developer. So some very clever people actually wrote the JavaScript for me. But I'll try and explain what's going on here, and then I'm going to dive into Visual Studio and show you the actual C#. So all we're doing is we're jumping into this windows.media.capture.cameracapture UI namespace. We're then using the async functionality, so we're saying we want to capture the file async, so we want to pass off to a different thread. We're not blocking the UI thread. The windows.media.cameracaptureui.mode.photo is actually an enumeration. We have two choices, photo or video. The biggest difference is we get a video file returned instead of an image, and we can bind that to a video tag. I'll show you the code for that for a sec. This JavaScript in WinJS, which will be explained to you in a bit more detail in a different session, has this async functionality and this then keyword that allows a callback to come in. So we hand off to the operating system on a different thread. The operating system then does its thing. It displays that nice, rich control for us. Once you click OK and you accept the image, the then keyword comes into play. We step into this method, and we get passed back this captured item parameter. We then have this nice little helper. You'll see down the bottom here, it says url.createObjectURL. All that's going to do is create a href to the file system. We bind that to an image source, and then it's done. That's all we need to do in JavaScript to access that webcam. So I'll jump back into Visual Studio now, and I'll try and show you what's going on in the C#. So if you went to David's session, who I believe has snuck into mine now, you'd have seen Caliburn Micro. I'm using exactly the same thing here to build this application up. It was a nice, quick, and easy way of me actually building the application out. So here in this camera photo method, I'll zoom in a little bit so you can see the code. Virtually the same as what we're seeing in JavaScript. It's the async functionality that we have consistent against WinJS and C#, the latest version of C#. And we're doing exactly the same thing. We're creating a camera capture UI object. We're then saying we want to use the async functionality, we want to pass off to a different thread, and instead of using the then keyword in C#, we use the await keyword. Exactly the same, though. So what we're saying is operating system, we want this camera capture control to appear, and we want to wait for that to finish before we actually carry on the operations. I'll hand off to a different thread, the operating system will do its thing. You'll see there that we have the enum as well. And then the operating system will return, we'll then step through into the next line of code. In XAML, it's a little bit different. We get past the binary object back again. We then pass that. We then create a bitmap image up, and we bind that bitmap image back into XAML. But essentially, it's the same amount of code to now access the underlying webcams for video or for cameras or for all that kind of rich functionality. If you've ever had to do this in Windows 7, you'd have ended up using pinvoke and Win32 APIs to try and access any of this stuff. It was not a managed area, and it was a very, very difficult thing to do. So this is a significant change for developers. So looking at carrying on, if we wanted to capture video using exactly the same control, it's exactly the same code. We're changing the enumeration. We're saying instead we're saying we want to change the mode to video, and we're getting past MP4 video back again. It's that simple. There's no need to change anything, and if you wanted to have that in your app dynamically toggle, it would be pretty easy to do. But if we wanted to do something a little bit more different, we wanted to take control of that UI because we want and have that in our application in a customized look and feel. Or maybe we want to be a bit creative and we want to crappy the photo up a bit like Instagram does so we can upload it to Facebook or Twitter and not just have this nice captured photo that the operating system will produce. And if we want to do that, it means we need to tap into APIs and access the raw stream from these devices. And we do that through exactly the same namespace, but we're diving into the media capture API instead of using the control. It looks fairly similar. The same namespace, we're instantiating a media capture object, and then we're going back into this async functionality and we're asking for stuff. Again, this is JavaScript. I'll try and show you some C# in a sec. The actual APIs, though, they don't just provide you an image. They're all around capturing raw streams. So we capture a video stream or we capture an audio stream. If you actually want to get an image out of this, what you do is you start the video stream, you then start showing the video exactly the same way as the camera capture UI was doing for us, and then you actually say, now take that still, it will remove that frame out of the video feed, and then you can start processing that frame if you want a still image. So that's what we're doing here. We're initializing the video stream. We're then starting the video stream, and we're then saying capture, and we're being passed video stream back in this instance, and we're binding it to a HTML5 video tag, which is called preview. We're calling the play method that's just then going to start that stream coming through and start binding it to the UI. Just to show you the significant differences in how this looks, I'm going to just load one of the samples up. It's the only time I'll use a sample from the dev.windows site, but it's a lot easier for me to show you it this way than to try and build it into the application. So under my demos, I have this Windows SDK sample, which likes to crash. It might be because I have that already open. No? I just deleted it off my desktop, so I see if it's still in my trash, and I can redeploy it. Okay, so why that's loading up, because my Visual Studio isn't overly fast. In my application, I've actually taken a different approach to trying to demonstrate the media capture controls. It was very difficult to try and get two camera elements into a single application. So I was thinking, well, how can I demonstrate in the context of a personal trainer dealing with capturing media and then and outputting it in somehow into a line of business app? I went online and I brought myself one of these, which is a 3.5mm audio jack connected to a credit card swipe. What this allows me to do is actually plug that into my slate, swipe my credit card, and I can then actually capture the incoming audio feed from this device, pass it off to a C++ library. The C++ library provided by the vendor then converts the incoming audio stream to something I can work with, to an object, which I can pass off to a credit card processing service. I can pass off to a credit card processing service, and then I can get paid. As a personal trainer, that's critical for me to get paid, and having the ability to swipe a credit card on the spot is really, really important. So when we start looking at these ways of inputting media, don't necessarily think of the conventional. Think outside the box. There's a lot of different things you can do with audio inputs, as well as lots of different things you can do with video streams as well. When you look at the world of computer vision, all the stuff around QR codes, look at what the Kinect's doing in terms of facial recognition, all that kind of stuff. You can pass off to C++ libraries. You can use C++ to JavaScript, C++ to C#, C++ natively to XAML. It gives you a lot of control there. The Imagine Cup guys done a great job this year for Australia, where they actually created an app where they connected a stethoscope to a 3.5mm audio jack, brought the audio stream in, and started converting that data to listen for breathing and then trying to detect pneumonia in children. Exactly the same APIs would allow us to port that to Windows 8 using managed code, using C#, using JavaScript. Very, very rich APIs. Okay, so I'm going to try and deploy this media capture now my Visual Studio is loaded up. And it works. Yay. Very, very different experience. So if I hit start device now, this is going to call into the operating system, and it's going to say, we want to access the camera, but we want to pull the stream back into our application. And it would have bound that stream to this preview box here, which is actually a XAML control. If I hit start preview, it's then telling the operating system to start pushing that stream into our application. We now have access to this rich stream coming in, which is just video. I haven't asked for audio in this instance. I can then record video, and it'll see me talking and move my hands, and if I hit stop recording, it'll then take that excerpt. So the operating system has then truncated that video stream into a video file and then give me the video file back again. If I want to capture a still that's in the API, I can hit take photo. It will take the still out of the video stream and pass it back into the application. What I also have access to, though, is because I have this video stream, and as I was just talking about in terms of audio, we can do this visually as well with images, is I can start the device, I can hit start preview, but what I can do is actually pass the stream into a direct show and start manipulating it so I can turn it gray, and that's where we get these Instagram style effects. We can manipulate the stream as it's coming in, and all the time it's gray, I can hit take photo and I get a gray photo. So it gives us a lot more control. We can break out of what Windows is offering us but still have this very, very rich experience. You'll also notice here that I have this built-in eyesight, which is obviously the camera attached to my machine. This is, if you have multiple cameras, you still have to consider this, because you're not in the Windows API anymore. So you have to enumerate these cameras and give people a choice of what camera they want to use. This is another namespace called windows.devices.enumeration, which I'll cover down the track. Very, very rich namespace. It's one of my favorite, if you can have such a thing. But it allows us just to display them and display the media devices attached, and then we can actually pass that back into the API to say, use front-facing camera, use rear-facing camera, use USB-connected Logitech QuickCam Pro 9000 device. It just expands that experience. Okay, back to the slides. Loads to get through, a lot of time left. Recording the video, essentially what I've just shown you, this is what it looks like in JavaScript. Capture audio, exactly the same thing. Very, very consistent APIs across all the stuff I show you. It'd be very, very familiar. And they've done it so it's easy. You can attach to these devices, have a very, very familiar developer experience. Okay, Windows 8 supports the latest sensors. When at Build, when they announced Windows 8, and specifically when they announced Windows 8 on ARM devices, they did state there will be a minimum hardware specification for all future devices. And we're talking about the mobile-style devices, the devices you'll walk around. And this is the type of thing we can come to expect as part of this minimum device specification. So we're looking at things like an ambient light sensor, a combination of motion sensors, some kind of location capability, and GPS, or mobile broadband. So looking at all of these applications and taking this approach to graceful degradation, look to see where the breadth is and what we can target next. We're going to move into location. Significant change to what we were just talking about, but I'm trying to get through as much as I can in the short amount of time. Location is an interesting one. Location can drastically enhance your user experience, but it's actually something that people don't realize is it's actually there on every single Windows 8 device. And the way Microsoft have done this is they've been really clever. We had location information in Windows 7. It was there, the browsers used it, a couple of applications used it, but again, we had to dive down into the unmanaged stack. We had to use Win32 APIs and plug into the location sensors. And some smart people, like Long Sen, they extended this Windows 7 API, and they allowed you to actually register location information using your IP address, geolocate in your IP lookup, and then bring it back in as a sensor. Well, Windows 8 have kind of grasped that, Microsoft have grasped that concept in Windows 8, and they've extended the location service to now have this default location provider called the Windows Location Provider. It does a fairly similar thing, but what it does is it builds upon the location information available to the device at the time. So if you're just on the internet, you're plugged into a cable, it will do an IP lookup, and it will look at your IP address, figure out where the telco is registered, so normally to a suburb or to a city level to the point of presence, and it will say maybe you're in the Gold Coast. So you get a fairly low confidence level of where that person is. If you're on a Wi-Fi network, it's obviously public knowledge now that a lot of large corporations drive up and down streets looking at SSIDs and geotagging them SSIDs. So that information is now publicly accessible on the internet. And so what Windows can do is it can take your SSID, look up your SSID, and say, hey, this is where we think you are. So you now might get a street level. If you're on mobile broadband, so you're now looking at mobile devices, so these Intel-style slates or the Windows on ARM-style devices, mobile broadband providers provide you location information. It's fairly more accurate because it kind of goes down to the towers and sometimes even more local than that. So it's a next level of information. And then finally, if you've got GPS built into your device, it will go fairly accurate. And what Windows does is it starts lower and works its way up. And you'll see these devices kind of refine themselves in the process as the location information gets better. They've been really, really good around this, though, because all of these devices could be attached to your machine. Like in my example here, this Intel device I have on the stage, it has access to mobile broadband, to GPS, to various other bits and pieces. I use one single API to access across all them devices, and Windows just handles it for me. The Windows location provider will just give me a location and a confidence rating. Again, we have to ask permission to use location. It's even more important in this instance, because location obviously has serious privacy concerns, and everyone is going to want to know what you're doing with location information, making sure you're not leaking it onto the internet and it's not going to end up on an FBI computer in the US somewhere. And when you go through the store and you submit, it's more than likely you're going to have to be quite explicit around your privacy policies for this type of information. The APIs. This is JavaScript again. If you're a JavaScript developer, a HTML5 developer, this is mostly fairly redundant to you because you can use the W3C standard JavaScript APIs in a Windows 8 application. The reason it's here is because everything that's accessible in the Windows RT APIs is available to JavaScript. So obviously the C# equivalent is fairly similar. I'll show you that in a sec. But if you wanted to go into the WinJS side of things, this is how you would do it. So how are we actually improving the lives of people and the user experience using geolocation? So I jump back to this application I have here. If I can try and find it in this jumble of stuff I have on my desktop now. If you're wondering why I have all this stuff, it's all the AppFest apps that I still haven't got around to deleting or playing with. Okay, I'll just redeploy it a bit quicker. Okay, so in the world of personal trainers, obviously you're roaming around the place, and we kind of come to this scenario. We've got 200 different clients, and they're everywhere. I travel across the whole entire Sydney metropolitan area. Wouldn't it be great if my application was intelligent enough to start filtering this information down? Because obviously this doesn't just apply to personal trainers, but anyone that travels as part of their job, like traveling sales guys and engineers and all this type of stuff. If you had this dashboard concept, you suddenly using geolocation to say, currently you are in this street or this suburb and here is your client base for your appointments for this area, or this person may need to be looked at because you're a traveling nurse or something like that. It's a very, very subtle way to enhance that user experience using sensors. So I have this list of 200. So I'm going to jump back into Visual Studio and I'll try and figure out how to whittle it down. And the way I've done this in this instance, and a lot of the services, I as an integration and devices developer, I work with REST and SOAP-based services as well as like UPnP and all the stuff we get to plug into our machine. And I try and abstract them in the same way, so I just have generic service classes that my view models can subscribe to. And this is what I needed to do in C# to actually access this geolocation information. And you think of the complexity I've just talked about of all of these devices it's actually connecting to. And this is the API. Very, very simple API. I'm going into the devices namespace. We switched, obviously, from media into devices. And we're saying, I want to... That's actually wrong, I think. I want to do windows.devices.geolocation.geolocator.getDefault. Okay, I'll jump back to the other one because it was in there and it should be right. But you should be saying, I want to get the default device that's attached to the machine. And then from there, you're going to say, again, async functionality, I want to await the position change. You don't have to await. You can get a single position and just leave it at that and say, yep, that's where I am. But the way that these devices will work is it will go and look up the IP address and then it will try and do SSID lookup and it will gradually refine its accuracy of these positions. You'll get this information back, and then you'll get a very, very rich object being returned to you. If I dive into the object browser for this, this geolocator object, you'll see we get a few different things being returned. So we get into the accuracy. Let me just run it, and I can show you. It'll be a lot quicker. So all I've done there is I'm calling this service class and I'm just calling it that get current location service. I'm going to put a breakpoint into the service, which is already there. And it's worked this time. In Auckland, it actually failed. So what's actually happening is it's gone to the operating system. The operating system has returned a location. And I've got this just single position. There's an event there that says location change. I can subscribe to that location changed event, and every time the location is changing, the operating system will tell me. I can then, from that event, manipulate whatever's on the screen. So as you're moving around somewhere, it could be that you're changing the information on the dashboard, or maybe you're writing a GPS app and you're actually changing the position on a map. And this object that's returned, it should be fairly rich. I'm actually getting this coordinate object as part of it, which is longitude and latitude, which is hopefully fairly self-explanatory. I then get this confidence, this accuracy as well, and that's depending on what device is being used. So you'll get like a fairly large accuracy, which means that they're not really sure where you are because it's an IP lookup, or it could be a fairly small one because it's using GPS. In recent revisions to this API as well, they've actually added the second part on, which is the civic address. So before, if you've ever done this, I think in Windows Phone, you would have had to use like Bing Maps and do reverse lookup on geolocation lookups to try and take a longitude and latitude and work out where exactly on the map it worked, and you had to pass that off to a web service to do it. But what the Windows APIs are doing is they're thinking, well, most developers want to use that information anyway, so we'll just give it back as part of the subject. So you don't end up having to make the Bing Maps calls anymore. It's all done for you, and you actually get returned just a street, a city, a street name, and loads of other information that can be used. And it's great. You can then incorporate into your UI a very, very easy to use, very, very rich API. Okay, I'm just going to jump back onto the slides. Am I there? Yeah. Okay, so done the demo. So sensors, so moving up the stack of things that we may have access to. Now, sensors is it's fairly new, like not all devices will have sensors, but they will have one or two. Most apps can benefit from them, and you don't even realize when you're using them. But the amount of times I've done this presentation to developers, and it's like, we didn't realize we were using sensors in that application. This is some basic examples. The gestural inputs that we get from moving mobile devices. And they're kind of commonplace in life nowadays. I always talk through these three because they're quite significant ones. Shaking the device. Like, ever since I've grown up and I was young, you shake a device to remove data from it. It's like Etch-a-Sketch days. You used to shake the Etch-a-Sketch to remove the data from it. You shake something when it's naughty and you want it to correct. So there's a standard gesture we use in life that translates to an app, and we wouldn't be able to get that unless we had access to the sensor information. Rotation. If you go file new projects, Windows Store apps in Visual Studio, all of the apps, they use a location, layout aware page, which means they subscribe to rotation events. So if you move them, the actual application reorientates itself so it sits in a portrait to a landscape view. That's all done by sensors. It's a standard gesture that people come to expect on all devices, not just the Microsoft devices. Any mobile device, you move it around, you expect the page to reorientate, but we wouldn't get that if we didn't have sensors. I learned that this one, flip. On a Windows phone, if you flip something over, it means be quiet. And it's a more common one we're seeing. If we turn something over, you don't want it to interrupt you. And again, it's something that I wasn't aware of, but it's becoming more and more apparent in mobile devices as well. And when I talk about we predominantly have access to sensors in more and more devices, the light aware applications are becoming one which is actually most of what you'll see in Ultrabooks now. And this is because the Ultrabook manufacturers are being really clever around battery life, and they're thinking, well, if we can detect the amount of light in the room, we can automatically adjust the contrast and save some battery power because we don't always need to highly illuminate the screen. So we can adjust that, the amount of illumination, we can save some battery power and push that limit. So they're there. They're there in most Ultrabook devices. And I've played with a few, and certainly it's in this nice MacBook Pro that I'm currently presenting on. And I have access to it. Windows sees it. It exposes it as a sensor. And again, subtle user experience enhancements in your application. If you've got someone that's going to be moving in and out of different environments, they're going outdoors to indoors to dark rooms to light rooms, it's a driving app or it's an app you just feel that it's going to be used in a mobile sense. Subscribe to the LightAware application. If you're using XAML, you subscribe to Visual State Management and all that stuff we get to kind of change around the interface. And just adjust the contrast of your application. Make it easier for people to use, because if you're making the app easier for people to use in and naturally in their environments, then they're going to want to use it more and they're going to become more and more familiar with it. And this is a great example that came out of a Microsoft slide deck of the map application. The map application is more likely going to be used for people walking around the shopping centre to then they're getting their car and their car is driving at night or during the day. So they actually just adjust the map. So it gets high contrast to low contrast to standard. And all they're doing is they're just subscribing to the light sensor to actually get these inputs. All of this information lives in the windows.devices.sensors namespace, exactly the same namespace as geolocation information lived. But the sensors are a little bit richer. Mainly because they can be somewhat daunting, so Microsoft they've changed the way we deal with this information slightly. The first thing they've done is they've said, if you want to be lazy and you just want to subscribe to orientation data because that's the only thing you care about, you want to know whether your app's portrait or landscape, we'll offer that to you. It will be there. It will be an event. You can just register against it. You go to windows.devices.sensors.orientation, a single event. And then when the device moves, you can change and you can use that information. On the other end, if you're a math geek and you really want to get the raw information from each one of these sensors, then you can get the raw sensor data. You can go into each sensor individually, check to see whether it's there, and just get the raw input. You can get the lumens measure of the light sensor. You can get the vector coordinate of the accelerometers. But you have to have reason to access the information. These are highly technical devices that you need to try and then translate into your application. And because of that barrier, the clever guys at Microsoft Research, when they were building Windows Phone 7.5, and then they brought that into Windows 8 now, they came up with this concept called sensor fusion. Now, as they determined that it was getting very, very difficult to just expose this sensor information and expect people to consume it. So they aggregated it into more manageable forms. So instead of saying your device is currently at 0.35x and 4.75y and this is your geolocation and this is this, they're saying you can subscribe to Compass and this is North. It's more manageable, it's more easier to consume, and they've done that with a few things. Inclinometer and orientation, again, that I've already talked about. Inclinometer is an interesting one. Sorry, I thought there was a demo slide there, which I actually removed. Because when you actually use these devices, you never really think about the fact that if you're holding a device this way and you're kind of moving it around, and then you switch to sit down and the device is in your lap and you're moving it around, you're actually moving from two different sensors. So if you were doing this all yourself, you're going from a gyrometer to an accelerometer and to various sensors, and you've got to subscribe to each one, and you've got to change the values and that type of stuff. So the research guys have been really clever at this. They've done all the heavy math for you, so you're just subscribing to these aggregated events. So how do the APIs look like? They look like this. They're very, very easy. Again, JavaScript, C# should be pretty straightforward to work out with what's going on here. It's an event. You're saying, I want to access an accelerometer. Instead of using the constructor, you just say get default, because there might be multiple of these devices attached. And each of the sensors, they're exactly the same way. The light meter will look exactly the same. And you just say, I want to subscribe to the event, and it will just be changed. And every time it changes, every time you move the device, it will call this, the operating system will call into this event, and it will give you some arguments. And in the accelerometer example, you'll get an X, Y, and Z. In the light meter example, you're just getting lumens. But that's it. That's all that's involved in subscribing to these events. In the orientation example, you're just getting orientation. You're not even getting the mathematical data underneath. Talked about sensor fusion. I'll just quickly jump through these bits and pieces, which I've talked about. If you want to use this stuff, this is kind of a hangover slide from the sessions I was doing a while ago, but as we're getting closer and closer to release, we're going to start to see more of these devices become available, and the sensors will be there, and we can start testing on actual devices. However, if you're at a point now where you want to start using this stuff in Windows 8 applications, but you don't have access to a device, a modified device that has access to this and exposes it via the WinRT APIs, that's the significant factor, because it's down to the manufacturers to have signed their drivers to be compatible with Windows 8 for all of this stuff to also work. You can go and get one of these things. They're not overly expensive. They're available on the internet. They look like little Arduino-y type things. You plug a USB into them, and there's like a light meter and an accelerometer and everything fused to that board. But they just recognize that WinRT will recognize them as the hardware device. So you can start testing them. You can move them around and various bits and pieces. I've also come to realize that in Windows Phone 7, there were some clever guys that actually ported the Wiimote via Bluetooth onto Windows 7, and you can actually use that as an accelerometer input. I haven't seen it yet for Windows 8, but theoretically the same thing could be possible if that device driver gets upgraded to WinRT, to Windows 8 support, and subscribed to WinRT, then we can start to see these peripheral devices provide input as well. But yeah, these are great devices if you don't have access to these Samsung devices or the WinRT stuff. So just a quick recap on the sensors. Very, very easy to use. They've removed the barrier to access complicated hardware and made it easier from JavaScript, HTML, and C++, Javascript, HTML, C# and C++ for you to use this stuff. And it's because they want you to use it. It's a way of enhancing your user experience drastically above and beyond just making the squares look really pretty on your screen. So I highly encourage you to look at this stuff, and not just the sensors, the location, and the camera as well. Your computer can look, see, feel, know where it is. It's becoming more and more intelligent, and this stuff is becoming more and more important because people are coming to expect it. So recap that, because I'm going to jump into a different namespace. I'm going to jump into a networking namespace. And I'm going to talk about this technology called NFC. Is anyone familiar with NFC? Very good. It's becoming more and more prominent. We're seeing more and more of this because it's becoming more and more popular in Australia. It's one of my favorite technologies. It lives in this huge namespace, a really, really rich namespace that we have access to, which is now networking. And there's loads of other stuff in there. Push notifications, background transfer, web sockets, all this stuff lives in this namespace. But proximity is quite a significant one, especially when we start to look at the developments we're going to see in Windows Phone 8 as well. And what NFC is basically RFID 2.0. So with RFID, we had this capability of reading an ID on proximity. So you could wipe something over it, and then the device would say, this is my ID. So similar to a MAC address. Well, NFC, what it is they've allowed us now to read and write to devices or to tags and store information up to a whopping 14 kilobytes on a non-powered device. So this is devices like this, which is an NFC sticker. So there's actually a little chip here, which when you put an NFC reader across it, it will actually send via magnets an electrical current around this. It will then power that chip for a microsecond, read the contents of that chip, that 14 kilobytes, take it off, bring it back into the application. That's passive NFC. If you get another device that actually has active NFC, so it has a power supply, you can do more richer stuff. So an application can provide the same kind of proximity interface. So instead of me touching, I can touch two devices together. I can then transfer data more actively. I can have an app that generates something. I can send photos and bigger files and bits and pieces backwards and forwards because I'm not having to power it from my device. It has its own power consumption. When I went to build, one of the things that wowed me was the fact that NFC is now available in JavaScript. With that much JavaScript, you can make two devices talk to one another using that much JavaScript. This is a significant factor in the development of WinJS, and it just astounded me. And again, we can do that in C Sharp. And I'm actually going to talk you through two scenarios of doing this. So first scenario, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what's happening in Visual Studio. Second scenario is I'm going to show you what's happening in the interface. So the first one I'm going to talk through is that on screen? Yeah, Visual Studio is on screen. I'm going to talk through the passive device, the sticker. So coming back to my line of business scenario, in a gym, you've got loads and loads of equipment around the place, and personal trainers have to walk around and kind of show people how to use the equipment, and then they have to write all the bits and pieces up onto their program and then store the program somewhere so they can access it. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have the capability just to have the NFC stickers on the equipment so she can walk up with her tablet, touch the equipment, and it goes, would you like to add the running machine to this program? And you go, yes, because it's storing that information on this tag. So in theory, it can happen. So what I'm going to do is hit remote debug on here and wait for this application to deploy. And I'll talk you through this API. So up at the top here in this proximity service that's been subscribed to by my view model, I can say go into the network and namespace, go into proximity device, and get default. Proximity covers a few different technologies, and NFC is just one of them. Also covers Bluetooth and Wi-Fi Direct. I'll talk about them in a sec. But I'm going to the default proximity device, which will cover all of this technology stack. Once I've got that device, if the device isn't available, ignore it. But once I have that device, subscribe to the device arrived event. Very similar to that JavaScript I just showed you. Once the device arrived, it will say, hey, there is a device here. What would you like to do with it? And then I'm jumping down to this method here. Is this all visible on screen, or do you want me to zoom in a little bit? It's good. I didn't hear anyone complain. Okay, I'll leave it as it is. So what I'm getting is I'm getting these arguments passed back from this event, and I'm saying I want to subscribe for a message. And you can do a whole load of things with these messages, and the messages are defined around a standard called NDEF, NFC Data Exchange Format. And I'm using my own namespaces here. Windows does have a few namespaces, which means you can do default actions. You could launch the App Store. You could put your app ID on one of these tags, go and stick loads of posters around the city, and every time someone snuck their slate on the poster, it would go and jump straight into the App Store and find your app and say, would you like to install it? You can do loads of stuff, URLs, V-cards, any type of MIME-type information, images, anything you can fit in 14 kilobytes, you can actually launch. But I want to send just basic text information. So I'm using a format called well-known text. This is a standard that came out of the QR code generation. It's fairly similar to JSON, but a little less structured. So once I subscribe to that, and this is the second one here. This one here. Once I subscribe to that, I'm just going to jump into this method underneath. So this is what we'll see. This is running. I'm going to touch this tag to the back of my application. To the back of my slate. And hopefully it was working a second ago. Ah, I'm not in the screen yet. Take that out. Sorry, it's only in the client details view model, which is why it wasn't working. So I'll jump into the back here. And you see, I've touched that. You saw me touch that onto the back like a magic trick. You saw me put the card in. It's now jumped straight in. Like I've done a physical action to trigger this. So I'm now here, and it's given me this message. And this is the NDEF message come in. It's decrypted by... Or it's deserialized by the APIs, if my Visual Studio doesn't crash. Okay, what I'm going to do is actually just put a breakpoint there and try again and see what happens. Okay, let me try again. There's obviously something wrong with this stage because I've had a few people have had problems with their demos today. This must be jinxed of somewhat. Okay, so we've got there. So what happens is we get this message in, and let's hope it doesn't stall this time. And the APIs have actually, they've taken this message and they've tried to deserialize it. And they said, yes, it's a well-known text message. You subscribe to the NDEF, the NDEF standard, and it's part of your namespace because that's what I've written onto the tag. And then it gives me the data. The data is just binary object that's passed back. And I have a buffer length that I can pass. Exactly the same as if you're passing something over TCP and you're bringing a TCP packet back in and you're going to deserialize it. So for me, all I've got on there is a string. And this is going to look weird because I've done it this way on purpose. So I'll actually open up what this string looks like. You'll see that it's a malformed string. I'm passing XML across, but it's a malformed string. And this is something that's actually... It's a little bug in the API that I found. And what actually happens is the NDEF standard says when you send an NDEF payload, the first couple of bytes is you expose, like the first two bytes is you say what type of message it is. And I'm saying it's an external MIME type. And then it's the namespace that I'm exposing. So it's the namespace I had at the top here. So you end up with this 14 kilobytes of non-string information because it's still in the NDEF format. And for some reason... that's passed back in the object doesn't deserialize it and break it up for us, and it's just passed back. So when I deserialize that string, I get this malformed XML message, which I don't actually deal with because I've done it on purpose for that. So I'll just let that play out, and it actually pops up on my screen here with a pop-up to say new equipment has arrived. And what I'm going to do is jump across onto the other screen now, so you should see my client record. And I'm going to get this... smartphone from another vendor that's not Microsoft with an application written in Java. So I'm hoping that it kind of gets across who I'm talking about. They uniformly have NFC now in most of their applications, so it's an easy way for me to show it to you. We don't have it in Windows Phone yet. It's coming. It will be in Windows Phone 8. But luckily, it's an international standard. So I can take my application. So imagine the scenario of personal trainer goes and gives the exercise regime to their clients, and the client's going running up and down the beach, and they're tracking all of their heart rate and all this rich type of information you get nowadays from exercise apps, location, stuff like that, but they don't necessarily want to push it up to the internet. And the personal trainer wants to bring it into this app and analyze it now, on the spot. So rather than having to try and email and all the lengthy way, we're going to use NFC. We're going to literally tap the phone on the back, the Nexus makes a funny little noise, and the record appears. It's an active NFC connection. It's pushed across. That's actually an XML payload that's come across, and it's actually just come across with the name test because that's what I had on the text box on my screen. But it allows us to make these devices interconnect, and not just Microsoft devices. This is the next ecosystem of mobile devices that are going to start talking to one another by proximity. The other rich thing we can do with proximity is we can instantiate more... better connections via better infrastructure. So we're talking about Bluetooth or Wi-Fi Direct. Bluetooth we're mainly familiar with, but Wi-Fi Direct is this next generation of Wi-Fi because we worked out ad hoc Wi-Fi just really wasn't a thing. So we've built Wi-Fi Direct, and Wi-Fi Direct is the ad hoc ability to create an access point on Wi-Fi. So your computer can say, hey, I'm now an access point. Your mobile phone can now subscribe to me as an access point, and we get a better infrastructure scenario there. because this is an unpowered proximity connection, we don't get a lot of we don't get data that fast. So Bluetooth is great; it's reasonably fast, but Wi-Fi is very fast. We get these ridiculous speeds of like the next generation of Wi-Fi going up to a gigabyte per second. So imagine a scenario where, if I touch my device, instead of having to pair via Bluetooth and exchange codes and stuff like that, it just made this Bluetooth connection, I can walk away and start gaming. I'm pushing real-time streaming information backwards and forwards. Imagine a better scenario where I walk up to a smart display in the street. So a music provider has launched a new service where you can download rental music, and you go up and you browse all this time using a nice rich touchscreen, and you put your phone there and you drag the file on, and it's immediately on your phone because it's just opening up this socket connection. You can use the touch interface, you can drag content across, and it will be immediately there on your device. You don't have to pair, you don't have to enter any details. It's proximity. It's based purely on touch. Next generation of Windows Phone gives us this information. It also gives us the capability of secure NFC as well, which is what we now see in retail nowadays by Visa, PayWave, and the MasterCard equivalent, and the Amex equivalent, and Google has their wallet, and there's loads of extra stuff. So NFC is my favorite technology, and it's something that we have access to in Windows 8. Very, very easy to use in any language. Okay, I told you NFC, touch. I don't have long left. So touch. People get bored when I talk about touch because it's one thing that we kind of dive down into the lower level APIs if we need to. Essentially, though, the story I give nowadays is if you want to use touch, use the controls. The controls subscribe to all the gestures that people come to expect. If you want to build your own controls because the limitation is there on the controls, there's actually you can go into the Windows.input namespace and you can subscribe to specific gestures. So these type of gestures, Windows will say, this gesture is being formed, and you can subscribe to that event and build your own controls around that. If you want to create custom gestures, and I would hesitate to recommend this because custom gestures are, one, fairly difficult, and two, they may be inconsistent with the experience that other apps are providing because you're creating something specific to your application. But a sort of viable scenario would be a game because you want to capture these raw inputs and do something with a game. You can subscribe to the pointer events. You can get the raw pointer events coming from the operating system, and it will give you the points of touch. Everything is available. You can use these things. I'm not going to show you because a lot of people don't care. They will use the standard controls. The other thing to realize is Windows 8 is a touch-first operating system. It's been designed from the ground up. The kernel has been re-engineered. The desktop has been re-engineered. The start menu has been re-engineered for touch-first. However, if we build for touch, things like the mouse work. We also have this stylus input. We've had these since Windows 95. This was Bill Gates' original idea around tablet computing. And up until quite recently, I was actually presenting on one of the original tablet PCs and still being able to write on my screen. And a lot of the Microsoft guys still do. People love the stylus. It has a place in computing. Even though like other vendors are saying that anything you can do with a stylus, you can do with a finger. A stylus provides dexterity we don't have with our fingers. So coming back to my personal trainer example, if they want to draw sketches or they want to kind of draw onto diagrams of people to say this is where the muscle groups you're going to be working on, providing that stylus input gives me that dexterity to draw where my fat fingers may not actually allow me to do that. Styluses also provide levels of inputs on some devices. So graphic designers prefer stylus because they can provide pressure-sensitive information that's being provided back via that device. So if you have a scenario where you think stylus is a viable option, use stylus. Most devices will ship with stylus. This is a brand new device that it's only 12 months old now, but it came with a stylus. Most of the other devices I'm seeing out have stylus support, so it is going to be there. It's not going to die off. Code for touch, get mouse and pen for free. That's all I'm talking about. Where keyboard comes into that, I'm not 100% sure, but it's there in some form. I'm just going to jump over this slide so I can skip to the last part, which is my favorite part. So that's just saying, do stuff. That's all the stuff I was kind of abstracting around. So other devices. This is everything that's left to try and talk to you about in about 5 minutes. So if you've heard me present this session before, you will know this story. But I'm going to talk about Windows.devices.enumeration. I told you this is my favorite namespace, and this is because, for me, it's a namespace that it doesn't get used too much. If you ever go into Devices Manager and you see all the peripherals attached to your machine, that is windows.devices.enumeration. It's a managed way to find out everything that's attached to your Windows 8 machine. So in the camera example I showed earlier, we was going into windows.devices.enumeration. We was passing a simple filter to say, get all media devices, and it was returning an enumeration of media devices. And these devices, they're just basic properties that you'll see in Device Manager. Device name, device icon, manufacturer, all that type of information. Excuse this story if you've heard it before, but it's one I do like to tell because it kind of highlights the power of this namespace. We have a technology nowadays called UPnP, Universal Plug and Pay. And this is a UDP web service style connection for hardware. So you put a device on your local wireless. So a good example is a smart TV. It will expose itself as a UPnP device and then a DLNA device on top of that. And it will have the equivalent of a WSDL. But instead of it being TCP and HTTP and SOAP, it's just a UDP in connection and you're making service style calls. When I got this device, when I was a builder, I came back and I found this namespace and was playing around with it, and I started enumerating all of the devices on my computer. But the enumeration isn't just devices attached. It can be UPnP devices. That means it reaches out across my wireless network and it sees my router, it sees my Xbox, it sees my TV. And I had this smart TV, and the smart TV was brand new, and it had its own services. You could control it via an iPhone and various things. And it's like, well, if it has its own services, wouldn't it be great if I built this little companion app around this smart TV? I have this Play 2 connection where I can push media through it. I can control the channels and stuff like that. So I started coding this up. I went through and used windows.devices.enumeration. I filtered out the TV, got the TV back, could start looking up the IP address that it was exposing in the device properties, made the connection via UPnP and the services, and started to do things like, from my app, I could sit in front of my app and change the channel and adjust the volume and mute it and stuff like that. The ironic part is, at the same time, I was coding in my spare room, and my girlfriend was sitting watching the TV. And every so often, you'd start to hear her swear. I started to get her coming in and going, the TV's broken. And what was actually happening is I was running these unit tests, and every time I was running these unit tests, it was reaching out across my network and changing the channel and muting it and adjusting the color. And they just changed the raw power of these namespaces and then a little bit of knowledge about how devices work and how these apps, these new style interfaces are going to reach across, like just that essence of what we're doing across just our home network. If you apply that to like a wider consumer breadth, there's loads that we can do with just this one namespace. Geolocation I've talked about, input I've talked about, Windows portable devices I'll get to in a sec because I want to touch on that. Printers, if we wanted to do something like a point of sale terminal and we wanted to customize the print formats and attach to a thermal receipt printer, this is the namespace you'd love. Sensors we've talked about. SMS is actually a depreciated API now, even though we've only just got to release. This allows telcos to actually read the SMS inbox on a SIM. We don't have access to that as developers. And if you write to that API and put it through the store, it'll actually get blocked. But that was the reason it was there. It's still on the documentation, which is why I still have it in my deck. The next bits I want to talk about, Windows portable devices. So this is Bluetooth, GAT, this type of stuff. Personal trainer scenario. I have a Bluetooth 4 heart rate monitor. So I can put a band around my chest. It transmits via Bluetooth Low Energy. My device can pick that up. So I can have, as a personal trainer, I can strap this up to my client and see what their heart rate is in real time. It means if they're not working hard enough, I can keep pushing them and pushing them and pushing them and make sure they're not going to have a heart attack at the same time. The way this works, though, the Bluetooth APIs, they're not managed APIs. They're there in the Windows Portable Devices namespace. But you have to write a driver around Bluetooth GAT and serial port profile APIs. You take the base Windows portable driver and then start writing your own C++ above it to expose the services that you want to connect to on Bluetooth. You then install that driver on your operating system, and then you can use the Windows Portable Devices APIs to start accessing that type of thing. Input devices. I'm not sure what I meant by that. I was tired when I wrote this in Auckland last week. The other thing I do want to touch on are companion apps. If you are a device vendor or you're building a device like the guy at the App Fest the other day, they were building these weird circuits that do audio kind of stuff that I didn't really understand too well. But you have this concept of a companion app. And what this means is if you put your device in the store, so you have your companion app, you've written your driver, and say you're Logitech, and you've got a quick cam functionality, and you want to build this app where you can capture the stream and make yourself look like a dog and all that kind of bloatware you would normally get when you plug these peripherals in. You can actually build that, and you can send that up to the store, get the app ID from the store, and then when you actually sign your driver, like link the app ID to the driver. And what this means is when someone then connects the app, the hardware peripheral to the Windows 8, Windows 8 will quietly in the background go to the store and automatically install that app, which is great for device manufacturers because you know you're going to have these extensions and these apps on people's computer. Not so great for the rest of us because it gives us a very quiet way for people to install bloatware on our computer. I've seen this happen once, and that's on my slate here. I've plugged the Vodafone's 3G SIM into the mobile broadband, and I didn't even realize, but the Windows just went out in the background and installed the Vodafone application, and it was there. It was instant. You just put the SIM in, and then Vodafone had appeared within 2 seconds on my dashboard. But very, very powerful way of extending the experience for hardware developers as well. Really, that's my time up. There's loads I could have spoken to you about in terms of hardware. It's this massive, great big thing that we now have access to, I can talk for days on it, and I have done in the past. But what I just want to kind of get across to you is Windows 8, they provide us these rich APIs, they tell us to make good user experiences, and user experiences isn't just about making the boxes on screen look nice. You have to provide the entire package. We're moving into a world of computers changing form factors. Yes, we're going to have desktops for a while, we're going to have all-in-ones, we're going to have ultrabooks, we're also going to have this new generation of mobile computers, we're going to have different form factors, we're going to have slate-style devices, they're going to have access to sensors, and the expectation from users is your application will start to harness the technology that's available there. So make the most of it, build great user experiences, and go and build apps. And apparently you can win a mouse. So that's it from me. And if you have any questions, I'll be here for 10 minutes or so while Brendan's setting up, and then I'm going to disappear to the pub and try and have some drinks.